thank you for coming. I appreciate you taking the time. I kind of wanted to start off with thinking about what are your research interests and what inspired you to pursue these topics. I know you're kind of taking a little shift right now from what you've been doing, but if maybe just a quick little overview might be helpful.
Sure. So I'm Deirdre Cooper Owens, and I am a new faculty member in the Department of History and also jointly in Africana Studies. And I'm generally known for doing historical research in the 19th century United States, more specifically geared towards slavery, black women, and the history of medicine. And so what initially attracted me to doing the history of slavery, there seemed to be such misinformation about slavery. And I was trying to reconcile some of the misinformation that was kind of, in popular culture, in history books, and or I should be very specific, history textbooks. And so I knew what I heard from my family members. I'm from the Low Country in South Carolina, and the Gullah Geechee people and culture and language and heritage is very connected to West Africa. And so I've been hearing these things that just didn't seem to link with some of what people believed about black people and enslaved people. And so by the time I got to my PhD program in the early 2000s at UCLA, I knew for sure I wanted to write about black women's experiences. I did not know exactly what. And so I kind of bandied about for a few years until my dissertation advisor threatened to give me a topic. So I landed in this world that where I had never even taken a class called the History of Medicine. And I was really excited and I don't know, and shocked that American gynecology had deep linkages to slavery and the experimentation of enslaved women. And I thought, wait, I went to an HBCU for women, for black women. I had a master's degree from another HBCU in African American Studies, had never heard of experimentation and slavery. And so it really piqued my interest. And then as you can imagine, there were not a lot of books written about the subject. And so I went about trying to find what medical discovery meant, what experimentation meant, how enslaved people were thinking, which was really difficult because, as you know, they were largely illiterate because the law made it so. And so it was a journey of how to do comparative history. I also wrote about these white men, who were medical men, many slave-owning physicians. I wrote about enslaved people, and then I took a detour and wrote about Irish immigrants who had also been experimented on. And so it was a wonderful exercise in how to apply historical methods. It desexified archival research because there were data archives, and I was bored out of my mind trying to read like this really fancy handwriting from the late 18th century and 19th century. And it was a solitary experience, but it was something that I really loved. And so fast forward, the book is out, it's done well. And I kind of am staying in the history of medicine lane, but widening it a bit to focus on disability studies. And so that's where the next project is taking me, understanding Harriet Tubman's life as a disabled woman who was born into bondage. And in fact, I just finished my first research trip of this sabbatical going to the Low Country in South Carolina, where she was stationed for almost 3 years during the Civil War.
Oh, wow. Is there a particular archive you went to there, or are you just...
So, yeah, I did. So I went to a traditional archive, Waring Library, which is a part of the Medical University of South Carolina, and they're undergoing renovations. So I was able to use one book, but it was immensely helpful, a botany book, because I was also interested in the local environment and understanding her as a person who contained scientific knowledge. Like she was a repository for a lot of scientific knowledge and, trying to figure out how was she able to use local plants and roots and herbs and all of those things, because she was from Eastern Shore, Maryland, and here she was in a similar environment, being in Beaufort in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And so I did field research kind of for the first time, which is pretty unusual for someone like me. It's not an archaeologist at all. But, you know, I went about trying to find where Harriet Tubman lived, where she worked. And it was so funny. Like, it was, you know, all of these kismet moments. So I was a little deflated at the library, but what I found on the ground was more exciting. So I found where Harriet Tubman lived. Like, the internet says, oh, the house no longer exists. I go to the church where she had a longstanding relationship, working with contraband / newly freed people. Beaufort was not occupied by Confederates. They were run out, essentially. So it was always Union occupied. Mm-hmm. And so here she was working with this Baptist church. And I found it, but then next thing you know, I found the house. So the internet was wrong. And I was like, wait, this is the house where she lived these years. And then discovered that although she was based in Beaufort and had done her work on the Cumbie River, she first landed in Hilton Head. And so I go to Hilton Head, to literally the woods where she landed in this historic town that was set up for free people called Mitchellville. And so it was just wonderful to be able to discover that, and then realize I have a very, you know, dear colleague who was the executive director of Mitchellville. So I'm like, you tell me this, right? So, you know, all of these wonderful moments, and even running into someone, you know, in a store who gave me wonderful leads about the Black local history, you know, and meeting Gullah Geechee community leaders and learning a bit more about Harriet Tubman's time. So it was a really fruitful and generative trip, but not a traditional one. You know, most folk are not, you know, going in the woods and going, trying to find old houses, but it was really a lovely moment. And then I found another kismet moment. I had some dear friends who allowed me to use their beach house on the Sea Islands to write. And I go to visit them. They moved to Beaufort. And she says to me, oh, I know you're doing this new research on Tubman. That's the hospital where she worked. And I said, I've been literally pulling out my hair trying to figure it out because it's been turned into a private residence. So all of the information had been scrubbed off the internet. She lived right across the street from it.
Wow.
And so it's, you know, these are the kinds of wonderful things when you open yourself up to doing things kind of, you know, outside the traditional archives, mm-hmm. that you know, because people are like, why do you care about the 19th century, you know, lived environment or natural environment? And I'm like, you never know where it can take you. So it was a really wonderful trip.
Sounds like, it reminds me of when I went to Petersburg, Virginia, and I had the same experience because I found, like, I know we're not supposed to be talking about me, but I just got excited.
Oh, yeah, we have a conversation.
But so one of the enslaved jockeys that I was looking at, he actually moved into being a horse trainer, but he had kind of a really interesting, I couldn't figure him out because there was one narrative about him, and it was published by the niece of his former enslaver, and it was written in very heavy dialect, and it was in Harper's Weekly, and it was just like other historians that had used it as like full-on fact about him, and I was like, I don't agree with, there's no way. And so I was just like researching him, and I found out that his like fourth generation grandson ran a museum in Petersburg, Virginia.
Goodness.
And I went there, I went there to go to the Library of Virginia anyways, but I was like, hey, I called him and I was like, would you want to like meet up with me or whatever? And he did. And I hung out with him at his house for like hours, and he walked me all around Petersburg, and he showed me like places of the Underground Railroad. And so it's just like the stuff you can find there. Like, yeah, he took me to like his family's like grave sites. I got to see like the jockey that I was doing, like his generations of his family after. It was just like super.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's great when you can kind of get, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love archives, I love going through the boxes, but there's something about, you know, even at this stage of my career, discovering how to do history differently, at least for me, and that was great. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience. And then there's a third project. But that's much more like medical bondage. I'm looking at the history of the C-section and experimentation on enslaved women that happened in Louisiana. So I'll be planning trips this year to go there as well.
Love Louisiana. I was just like, what?
It feels good to go to the, it feels good to actually do research in really pretty warm places.
Especially, I was going to ask too, I was like, oh, what's your like favorite part about Connecticut and like a non-UConn thing? And I was like, well, fall's really pretty. And I'm like, it's a good thing I'm asking you before winter, because have you had a East Coast winter before?
Yes. I grew up also in Washington, D.C., and I've lived in Brooklyn before I moved to Nebraska. So
okay.
I worked at college. Yeah, so, you know, it's I kind of know
well
the East
there.
Coast. Yeah, but, you know, I'll take a New England winter anytime over a Midwestern winter. I lived in Nebraska for 4 years, and the wind is like nothing any New Englander has ever experienced. So I will take this any day.
Yeah, and the ice storms. I don't know if they get them there, but that's what I know about the Midwest, is that everything turns to ice very quickly.
Yes.
So
including the blinking of your eyes, the liquid in your eyes. it was the coldest place I've ever lived.
Well, I'm glad you're here. what drew you to UConn? Like, what are you like most excited about working in the UConn History Department?
You know, I think what was really interesting for me was that it's a department that has a lot of scholars who do slavery in the 19th century, and that's nice. And then I found out that another colleague, Stephen Veter, was also hired, and he does history of medicine. And of course, Manisha Sinha, Bancroft winning author in my field. I mean, she's a little really working on abolition and some Reconstruction era histories. But it was exciting to be able to think about ways that we can collaboratively help strengthen U.S. slavery, you know, at UConn, and hopefully make it even more prestigious than it already is. And then, you know, on a personal level, I missed being on the East Coast a lot. You know, it's just something that I'm used to. It's a region that I love. And so it was really great for me to kind of land back in a place that feels like home for me.
Minus the bad coffee.
You know, you can get around that. I grind my own coffee. I have a whole process. Like, I grind my own coffee beans. You know, you can get them if you order the right bean.
I just remember that from the breakfast. You're like, is there anywhere with good coffee? And Constance are like, no.
Yeah.
I'm from Seattle, so there's no good coffee around here. But,
I have to get my own piece of mine.
Well, I think, hold on, I'm just going to look. Okay, so I think maybe we could just close out with some, like, kind of fun kind of questions. I think they're fun. Like, what are you currently reading? I know you're doing a lot of research, but who's kind of, like, top on your...
Jeez, it's like, I might be the only professor saying I'm not reading anything for fun. Everything I read is connected to judging books for prize committees. I'm trying to think about anything I guess it would be the archival find. It was published by a Confederate officer, and it was about botany and natural medicine. In the southern states, in the Confederate States of America. But I have to be honest with you, it was so interesting. I mean, it was exhaustively researched. He published it during the Civil War in Charleston. And there were so many ways that I'm like, oh my gosh. It was a much more honest book because, you know, this is what I've discovered. Slave owners and I use slave owners very intentionally. I don't say enslavers, but there are lots of reasons. We can have a conversation about that. I think it is a much more truthful depiction of the dehumanizing effects of slavery on the owners, not necessarily on the people they legally owned. And so I never want that to be taken away from the brutality of what slavery was. But it was, to me, sometimes they're much more honest in what they write. And so when he was writing this book, he was like, oh, you know, it was the Negro, the African who brought the Bene, you know, seed to the U.S. and or to the Confederate States of America. And, you know, I mean, so it wasn't like this kind of like I'm giving black people their props, but it was this kind of very honest accounting because he needed the information to be accurate and to be used as a text and a guide. And so, you know, it's just like kind of reading sometimes the 19th century medical notes from these doctors who in these really kind of weird moments, they may have all of these social ideas about black people and white people, but sometimes when they're writing about these bodies, they're writing, you know, about black bodies in very similar ways that they write about white bodies, you know? And so there are these moments where it seems to me it's their descendants who have had more problems with the accurate tellings of history than the actual people who lived in the 19th century. So that book was an interesting one for me because it contained so much information and black people were still, you know, it was supposed to be about plants and roots and herbs and trees and those kinds of things. And yet I still found black people and their knowledge around agriculture embedded into the book. So
interesting.
Yeah.
But
now I will try to find a fun book to read.
I mean, to be fair,
connected to a book review or prize committee.
Well, what is the okay? Maybe like what is the best history book you've read so far? Is that controversial?
Oh no, because you know. Okay. Best is always subjective, right? I mean, so it's just, you know, it's just Deirdre's best.
Yeah.
Okay, there's some I can't talk about because people's 10-year letters. Okay. You know, I have to say I'm still thinking about Jennifer Morgan's Reckoning with Slavery.
Well, I just read that.
I had to write a review for it. I don't know, it could have been a year or so ago. But it stays with me because it wasn't necessarily what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
A theoretical book. And it takes the accounting of enslaved people and women and reproduction. She takes those ideas and concepts and subjects and she does something to them that was really difficult, and sometimes it was hard for me to grasp, but those are sometimes the best books because you go back and you can reread and, you know, stretch the way that you were thinking about things. There was another one I forgot. There was another one that I read that made me have to really set aside my own biases, and that book was called is called Birthing Black Mothers by Jennifer Nash. She's a professor at Duke, and I was there was a book watch event, so I was one of the respondents to her book. And I remember telling her in the audience, I said, you know, there's this old Southern saying where they're like a hit dog will holler, and I was like, I was hollering because I was a little upset at the beginning of her book because she was saying that black motherhood and black mothers. Well, let me take that back. Black mothers were not necessarily seen as pathological and negative. And although black motherhood was in crisis and peril because of the birthing crisis, that they were sympathetic figures. And I was like, this is not true. You know, I'm a historian of medicine. I do reproductive justice work. This is not true. And then I had to recognize that she's talking about what black motherhood symbolizes in a post-George Floyd, Black Lives Matter moment, and that there was a geopolitical framing of black mothers during this particular historical moment and political moment that she was addressing. And so it, you know, but I told her that was a wonderful thing to kind of dislodge my very, you know, strong beliefs about the ways that Black women and Black birthing people and mothers are seen. And so it was a book that helped me to dislodge maybe some of my own biases and to be a bit more capacious in how I accept reinterpretations. And so it was a wonderful book as well for me to kind of wrap my head around.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry. I think I had one. Do you have time for one more question?
I do.
Okay. Actually, I was going to ask what your teaching interests were.
But I'm also bad.
I know. So we will leave that for later. How about something that you like to do when you're not doing historian scholarly things?
If anyone knows me and knows me well, I could have been an image consultant. I love putting together looks. And
really?
WKS looks. If you saw my outfits and the photos of my outfits of the day, I think you'd be impressed. That's my thing. That's how I met the woman who told me all about. I was in Saks doing some retail therapy. I met this very nice sales associate who hooked me up with all things Black and Gullah in Hilton Head. But I love that, like, putting on looks. That brings me immense joy. So I tend to get compliments daily. That's not an exaggeration, on my outfits or some accessory or something that I've worked. And so that brings me a lot of joy.
Interesting. I think you're very stylish, so I could see that. But as far as like style though, who do you feel like you get inspiration from? Or you feel like it's kind of like,
Black Academia has some real stylish people. some of my friends, like Nicole Fleetwood, she is an art historian and curator, and she went to MacArthur maybe 2-3 years ago. And Nicole is fancy. And but Instagram, I love just kind of, you know, whatever your personality is. So whenever you see me, the hair is going to be big, the earrings are going to be big, and the lip is going to be bold. That's me. It doesn't matter where you look, you're going to always find big earrings, big hair for me, and some bold lip. And so I just get inspiration sometimes looking at other people. I'm a people watcher. I think most historians are people watchers, you know, because it's like we're trying to piece together, you know, stories about people, and theorize them and analyze them. And so people watching is something that's interesting for me. We're just seeing how really artistic people, in particular curators, I like to see how they put things together. And that sometimes gives me inspiration about a particular blue or a fabric or, you know, something like that. But that's,
wow.
Yeah, that is something that brings me joy.